Hey y'all, it's Travelle.
And Jarrett.
And if you couldn't tell by the episode title, we're finally tackling R. Kelly and Michael Jackson. That means that we likely may be making mention of allegations of sexual assault and abuse.
If that's something you'd rather not listen to, we get it. Feel free to skip this episode and revisit your favorite from our catalog. I suggest probably Why White People Love Wakanda, or maybe Gayle King and Kobe Bryant, or my favorite, When Gospel Music Hits and Leave a Mark. And leaves a mark.
You struggled there.
Because I was not sure I was saying the right title. But anyway.
Anyway, let's get started.
Welcome to Fanti, one of the best podcasts of this abomination of a year.
Also
the podcast for all those very complex and complicado conversations. Especially the ones that we've been promising for you all year long about the gray areas in our lives. I am journalist and writer Jared Hill.
I am Travelle Anderson, entertainment journalist, film critic, other things sometimes as well. Coming up on the show today, we've teased it literally since the very first episode of this show.
We pitched this show with this.
We did. Robert Sylvester Kelly and Michael Joseph Jackson. It's self-explanatory at this point, I feel like. But first, we're going to get into our Pass the Popcorn for the week. This is our segment to dish and chat about all the foolishness y'all doing on social media. And earlier this week, over the weekend exactly, a video began making rounds of a restaurant owner, let's say, chastising some of his patrons for twerking during Sunday brunch. Now, Jared, for the listeners out there, Jared has not seen this video, has not heard the video, because he's on a hiatus on the social medias and stuff like that. So what I would like is, we're going to play the clip, Jared. I want you to hear it as I first heard it, and then okay. I will give you some extra information that has come out since the video made its rounds, and then we'll go from there.
I invested a lot of money into buying this building, into developing this concept, so black people can have somewhere nice to go to, okay? Somewhere where we can feel good about ourselves as a... Come on! Stop the music, please! Somewhere where our people can feel good about ourselves as a culture, okay? Yes. Wait, no, real talk. And so all this twerking and shit, take it to Prime, take it to Pink, don't bring it here because we're a restaurant. And so beyond that, 75% of my customers are ladies. And I want men to show respect for themselves, for how they carry themselves here. So how can I tell the men to respect themselves? And you guys are twerking on glass here. If you want to do it, get the fuck out of my restaurant. Because I did it for our people and I did it for our culture. So don't do it. Now, don't do it again. I don't want to hear it. If you don't like it, get out, because I don't need your money. I need to provide something for my people. And don't do it again. Thank you.
All right.
Oh.
So the voice you heard, his name is Kevin Kelly. He is the founder and owner of this fairly new establishment in Dallas called True Kitchen and Cocktails. That is cocktails with a K at the beginning.
I was going to say, I don't know how much you can be like yelling at people about being respectful when you have cocktails spelled with a K, but I'm not going to touch that because his name is Kevin Kelly.
Exactly.
And they both start with K's. I see what he was doing there.
Exactly. Okay. So this video came out, I think, Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening into early Monday, and people have thoughts and feelings. And so initially, folks were like, why is he talking to people like that? Like, that's so disrespectful, da 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 da. And then I slid into a room on Clubhouse. I feel like we've spoken about Clubhouse now 12 times on this show. But I was in
Clubhouse this morning, so yes.
I slid into a room on the Clubhouse app, and it was a room started by folks who live in Dallas who have gone to this establishment. And they started sharing some more information. So I want to give you some of that extra information, and then we'll get into your thoughts. Some of that information includes that the owner, Kevin, or somebody else from the restaurant had gone to this group, you know, of women in the corner of the restaurant and spoken to them before Kevin started talking like this. He apparently had asked them nicely at least once before to stop twerking.
To stop what?
Twerking.
Oh, okay.
You also will hear in the background, he yells at the DJ, but before he yells at the DJ, you can hear the type of music that was being played, right? Very, very brunch boot, you know, tease.
Twerkalicious music.
You know. And additionally, some of the people were saying that folks' food was so delayed, like getting their food, like they've been waiting an hour, almost 2 hours. And so they started ordering drinks. And as you know, when one starts ordering the drinks, things start to happen. Now,
first of all, if my food is 2 hours late, I have an issue.
Especially if I'm drunk. But if I'm drunk, it will extend, you know, the period just a little, you know.
You get a little more grace if I have a little bit of alcohol.
And then I do just want to say that the drinks, some of the drinks that folks can order, there are photos going around and they're like these frozen, like daiquiri style drinks in Douce bottles.
Okay. Come on.
And there may or may not be a dress code as well.
Oh, Jesus. The offense all around my life. Go on.
So I just want to know, what are your initial reactions, your initial thoughts to hearing how he interacted with these folks? And now also you have the blessing of having some of this extra information as well.
I mean, it is just the most niggardly story I'd ever heard in
Not
my life.
Not niggardly.
N-I-G-G-A-R-D-L-Y. It is a word in the dictionary.
I know that.
It is ratchetry through and through. The Douce bottle really puts it over the top for me. It has a very who do you think you talking to kind of tone to it. But I'm also, one of my friends, he's like, ugh, you always want to see the best in people. And like, I want to see the good here, or like give benefit of the doubt. I would imagine if the food is running 2 hours late, he's probably a little stressed about whatever's going on. But like, there's never really a justification to talk to people like that, especially not customers that still have not paid you yet, right? Like, because the food hasn't come, and so you seemingly haven't dropped checks. But also, I do want to hold space for the fact that if he'd already asked them to not be twerking and dancing because it's a restaurant and not a club, I understand that part of it. But the way that he's handling this is so over the top and extra that it kind of, I think my mom would say like, yeah, but they cancel each other out. So he's still wrong.
He is wrong, period, in my opinion. Because I think like yes, it's not a club. I think that is right. And there are videos and photos of at least one person literally standing up on a booth and twerking with her hands up on the wall.
Like, no, right? Sis.
Which is out of control, okay?
Not I want to be clear. Not at True Kitchen and Cocktails.
Not at no restaurant, right? Like, not no place that got a little small bites, you know? That being said, though, I do want to share, you know, some of the folks in the Dallas area were mentioning that, like, when he first opened this place, he was using club promoters to promote the place, and how that leads folks to believe that like this is a certain type of environment. If you have the folks who are promoting these clubs also promoting your spot, not to mention, I don't know if you've ever been to a good brunch.
Okay, so wait, before you even say that, because I'm sitting here thinking like, oh, but I do love my people that show up to a Southern big city brunch. Like, it's a very specific crowd, honey. They look for a very specific kind of turn up, and I appreciate that.
Listen, and I think it's also, like, I think my main issue is that, like, his comments about, like, I don't want you twerking here, this isn't that type of establishment, I think those are valid. But as he starts talking about how he want men to respect themselves, and the only way they can respect themselves is if the women respect them. That's some respectability bullshit right there.
Yeah.
And like, that's some shit that like I, as a patron, shouldn't have to be, you know, responsible for how you feel about, you know, an individual person's, you know, respect for themselves and how that manifests itself with other men. Like, that's not my responsibility. And as soon as he said that he didn't need my motherfucking money, I would have got my ass up. Okay, I would have grabbed my waffle in my hand and my Douce bottle.
But
with
you probably
my frozen
didn't have
drink.
The waffle yet.
Probably didn't even have the waffle, see? Okay, probably got to take it from somebody else's table as I walk out.
I was going to say, of all the things in the conversation, in the clip that you played, I think the respectability situation of the, if I ask the men to be respectful of themselves, how can I ask them to do that if you're in here doing, like, fuck all that, right? Like, that ain't got shit to do with shit. If you don't want people twerking, I get it. But don't make it about the respectability of how we're supposed to behave in the world and make it about gender and all this other shit. Like, y'all, I don't want you dancing, but like you also have a DJ, right?
Listen,
like,
who's throwing the tunes, okay, Kenny?
Listen, okay, the way that you just bent over a little bit to give it a little extra something.
Just a little something, something, you know.
Just a little something, but like it's just to me, it's like you can't give the girls all of those things.
Right.
And again, as we like to say, girls is gender neutral.
Very much so. G-Y-R-L-S. Okay.
Maybe even with the Z, just to be clear. But like, you can't give the girls all that and expect that and have them sitting there for all that time without their food and think, honey, someone's not going to pop their hip left and right. Like,
At the same time, sis should not have got her ass up on that fucking booth and started twerking.
She's wrong. Listen, she's wrong. You shouldn't have been up on the booth, sis. Honey, you're disrespectful to the property. But at the same time, he really overdid that.
Right.
This was fun.
I'm glad you had some fun.
I like being I like coming into a segment like not really knowing what exactly is about to happen, especially considering what we're about to do.
Okay, well, let's get into it.
All right, so and this is the section where normally our producer would lay in a little bit of music.
Twerking by the cakes, yes, I'm twerking by the cakes.
As we toss to break, but for reasons that we're going to discuss a little bit later, we cannot do that here. So Travelle is going to sing the music that we don't want to stream.
I used to think that
coming up, we've promised this show for as long as this show has been a show, and even before,
and
Michael Jackson and R. Kelly are getting the grand fanti treatment that you've been waiting for after this short break.
If I can see it.
Okay, we're done. That's good. Thank you, sweetie.
Then I can do it.
Oh, okay.
If
come
I
on,
just run. Believe it, there's okay. Nothing to it. I believe I can fly.
Does our podcast deep dive into the weirdest Wikipedia pages we can find?
Yes. Do we learn about scam artists, remote islands, horrible mascots, beautiful diseases, and mythical monsters?
Yes, 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 absolutely, and yes. Do we retain any of this knowledge?
Probably not. I'm Emily Heller.
I'm Lisa Hannawalt.
We make art and comedy and TV shows and also the podcast Baby Geniuses. For the past 8 years, we've been trying to learn new things about the world and each other every episode.
But let's be honest, this podcast is mostly about two friends hanging out, shooting the breeze, and making each other laugh. We're horny, we like gardening and horses, and we get real stupid on here.
But like, in a smart way.
Yeah.
Join us every other week on Maximum Fun.
Baby Geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my friend's favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. You're hearing the voices of real litigants, real people who have submitted disputes to my internet court at the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I hear their cases, I ask them questions, they're good ones, and then I tell them who's right and who's wrong.
Thanks to Judge John Hodgman's ruling, my dad has been forced to retire one of the worst dad jokes of all time.
Instead of cutting his own hair with a Flowbee, my husband has his hair cut professionally.
I have to join a community theater group.
And my wife has stopped bringing home wild animals.
It's the Judge John Hodgman podcast. Find it every Wednesday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Thanks, Judge John Hodgman.
All right, welcome back to Fanti. I don't think there's a conversation we've deep teased more on this show over the almost year that we've been on the air. For the sake of this conversation, and frankly for time, we're going to assume that you know who both Michael Jackson and R. Kelly are.
And if you don't, I'm going to need you to roll out of that rock or that cave you've been under. Just do a quick Googles, okay?
Honey, hit the Google and hit the radio. We're not going to do a traditional Fanti structure here where we give you the fan and then the anti. We're going to have what some might call more of a complex and complicado structure here, juxtaposing both artists to one another and the ways that their careers and situations, if you will, kind of rolled out. So I think a place for us to start here is kind of like where things got a little bit murky in their stories. And I think the documentaries are both kind of a good place to start.
Right. So that's Surviving R. Kelly, which is on Lifetime. And then right. That is Leaving Neverland, which premiered at Sundance and then I think went to HBO.
OK, Correct. And so both of these documentaries basically told the stories of the victims, the accusers of both of these folks in really graphic detail. Mm-hmm. And R. Kelly's, the documentary about R. Kelly, Surviving R. Kelly, I think it was like 5 parts. And it was really difficult to watch. But you were actually at Sundance when the Michael Jackson documentary Leaving Neverland came out. Mm-hmm. It was very long. It's 2 parts. It's 4 hours. And for me, when I saw this documentary, it just kind of affirmed a lot of the things that I kind of thought about Michael Jackson, to be honest. Michael Jackson has always been a very mixed figure for me. I kind of think of him as kind of like this unusual supernatural like figure, because
it's not unusual to be alone with anyone.
I'm just gonna give you some space because I don't know how Tom Jones had anything to do here. But my primary early memories of Michael Jackson are Remember the Time and that music video. That was the first music video where I was like, I want to learn that dance. Mm. And later on realized I was a homosexual. But then I feel like all of my gay friends were like, oh, I was learning the dances from the music videos. And I was like, oh my God, I did that too. But then also one of the other really early things that I remember about Michael Jackson was that statement that he made from Neverland Ranch, the Neverland Valley. He's wearing that red shirt and his hair is back, I believe, in a ponytail. And he's talking about the allegations against him. And it is a very difficult thing to watch. Like, I went back to watch it yesterday because we were going to be having this conversation today, and I couldn't even really watch all of it. He talks about how...
Is this, like, the 90s, early 2000s?
It's, like, 1993.
Okay.
And he talks about how the, you know, investigators had him stripped naked and were taking photographs of every part of his body and his genitals and all that, and I was just like, I can't imagine what that must be like. But it was just a very mixed kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I'd already had like a bit of a separation between the art and the artist with Michael Jackson, because like I always really loved the music and the videos were so cool, but he was always someone that was really hard for me to understand, as like he's just always been like this kind of just unusual figure, right? Like I said, like he's unusual, supernatural like kind of person. What has been your like background with Michael Jackson, and how did you respond to the documentary?
I feel like my relationship with Michael and Michael's music isn't really as deep rooted as other folks are. Like I feel like people look at Michael Jackson in the way that like folks today look at Beyonce. Right. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like you said, supernatural, otherworldly, somebody who has so much talent. I think for me, the music was the music. Like, it was cute and I would dance to it when I heard it. But like, I wasn't, you know, latched on to Michael. And I think like probably the first thing that I even remember, like consciously remember seeing Michael attached to, was The Wiz for me. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, I mean, I think when the doc came out, like you said, I was at Sundance when it came out. I was in that very first, you know, marathon screening. It was 4 hours straight with like a 5-minute break in between the 2 parts.
Can I pause you there? Mm. I think there is something to the way that we do a marathon screening of something and the way that it impacts you. Did you do a marathon screening of When They See Us?
Yes, with you. Was that with you?
No, that wasn't with you.
That was somebody else.
Okay, yeah. So I was at Netflix for a marathon screening of When They See Us, and like marathon screening is exactly what it sounds like, right? Like you watch all of it back to back to back. We had a lunch in the middle. And like I feel like it impacts you emotionally in a different way to sit in all of mm-hmm. that content for all of those consecutive hours. Did you have that experience with
Very
that?
Much so. And you know, I like after the first part of the MJ documentary played, which we all thought was like, oh, like that was already super heavy. Like what else can do you got in another 2 hours?
Right.
And it did get worse. And then, you know, his two accusers, Wade Robson and James Safechuck, were in the audience and, you know, came up on stage afterwards along with the creators of the doc, and it was heavy, you know, and it was one of those things that like you just couldn't ignore what you had just seen. And it felt very convincing. I wrote about the experience when I was there. And all I remember is that after it posted, like, my mentions on Twitter were trash for like 2 weeks with both bots and real people who just like calling the doc into question. And we should say, right, that like different legal claims have been brought against the Michael Jackson estate from both of these accusers. And if I'm not mistaken, they haven't gone anywhere. I think they might have actually been like fully dismissed out of court. And so I do want to say that. But I had a very different experience with Surviving R. Kelly, though, right? Because okay. It was broken. I actually didn't see Surviving R. Kelly when it first made its rounds, when it was first premiering. I didn't see it until it hit Netflix. But I didn't watch the whole thing. And I felt like I didn't need to watch the whole thing, right? And shout out to Dream Hampton, who led the production of that project. But I think when we talk about R. Kelly, you know, for me, Trapped in the Closet is the thing I go to most often. Like, it is like classic camp canon for me. And I think like that was one of the moments that I was like, oh, I like this performance thing y'all doing on, you know, that it was very actor-like. It was very stage performance, very Tyler Perry, Madea.
Wait, what was this?
Trapped in the Closet, girl.
Oh, okay. I was like,
That's how y'all know he wasn't paying attention to me, okay?
No, actually, I was, but I was like, I was also trying to make sure that we had the right thing about the HBO documentary, but like, Trapped in the Closet was just, okay.
I'm just saying, it was a moment, it was and wild. I think that is also something that, like, you know, we don't really get to enjoy, perhaps, in the ways that we were enjoying it when it had those 15 or 20 some odd different parts that were coming out. If y'all don't know what I'm talking about when I say Trapped in a Closet, well, I was going to say maybe you Google it or YouTube it, but also maybe you don't. I don't know. That's up to you. But what about you and R. Kelly?
So for Trapped in the Closet was kind of like one of like the last things in like the R. Kelly music situation for me, to be honest. And like, since we don't want you to go stream it, Trapped in the Closet was like a soap opera in music, basically, right? Like, he would come out with like a new chapter every so often.
But like that a would hood be soap opera. Right.
Oh, absolutely.
It was like if Friday, if the movie Friday or Friday After Next was a musical.
Okay. Sure. I don't know that works for me, but why not? But like it was a soap opera that like it was about him. I think he was like messing around with a woman and they were cheating together and the husband came home and he was hiding in the closet. And like, it was ridiculous. But also entertaining. And you're like, well, what's going to happen next? And then another song would come out. But like, I want to say my earlier memories of R. Kelly had probably somewhere pre I Believe I Can Fly. But like, I feel like that was like his biggest moment probably of his whole career was probably I Believe I Can Fly. But R. Kelly was always a figure that like was just kind of everywhere. And we've had this conversation about some of the shows that we've done where like he was just kind of ubiquitous, right? Like R. Kelly was everywhere and he touched so much. And I'm still learning, like, R. Kelly was a part of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, R. Kelly was like, oh, he wrote on that, or he produced on that, or he was a part of that. And I mean, we can't remove R. Kelly from Aaliyah and, like, all of that music and his influence there and their relationship, which we'll get into in a little bit. But, like, R. Kelly is such an odd thing because, like, the more I learn about R. Kelly, about like these stories, the more difficult it is to like go back and see how popular he was. And like so many of these things that he was doing contemporaneously, right? Like in the moment that these songs were out, it's kind of mind blowing to me that these kinds of things were just being allowed to happen.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned kind of the ubiquity of the music. And so I actually wanted to read an email that we got in response to the Bill Cosby episode.
Right. Before we do that, though, we're not going to be debating the validity or the veracity of these claims of their charges and all that kind of stuff, because y'all can do that somewhere else. All we know is that, similar to On the Record with Drew Dixon and talking about Russell Simmons abusing her, we can't unsee what we saw. We can't unfeel what we felt listening to these people recount their abuse. And we're not going to be debating what's true, what's not, what should be in public record and all that. All of those things are out there. That's not the conversation that we're here to have.
But back to the ubiquity of the music point, we got this email from Lynn in response to our Pill Cosby episode. And, you know, one of the things that she mentioned was related to Michael Jackson in particular, but I think it applies to R. Kelly, at least for Black folks. And so she says, I was a little bummed about how you didn't get too into the argument of love the art, hate the artist. I hope that you might address that further in the Michael episode. Music plays a large part of my family. It's incredibly difficult to expose our kids to music and somehow avoid Michael Jackson. He is ubiquitous. I have loved his music since I was a kid, and his work has to be part of my kids' upbringing. But how and when can I tell my kids about his alleged misdeeds? I can avoid showing them Bill Cosby. I can't keep them from hearing Michael Jackson. Every time MJ comes on the radio or on a playlist, half of me loves it and sings along, while the other half hurts inside for the children he traumatized. And I think that is that gets at, I think, a lot of folks' issues with with Michael and even with R. Kelly. Like, I will be, you know, I'll be listening to something, or I'll just be like talking in regular conversation, and, you know, like sometimes I like to burst out in song every now and again when the spirit comes across my heart, and, you know. But you can't, in some of those songs, I should say, I want to be like, I believe I can fly, or I don't see nothing wrong with a little bump and grind. But you can't, I don't know if you can or can't, like, that's for your own individual thing.
I think you burst
thing.
Out into You Were Not Alone yesterday while we were producing this episode. Like, and like, it is hard to not like connect with those songs, but go ahead.
Well, that's my point though, right? Is that these are songs and that were very foundational to a lot of us, right? I Believe I Can Fly is like the go-to graduation song, no matter what age, right?
Or was.
Right? And then I also think about, as you were mentioning, Michael, what's the man's name? R. Kelly, Robert, Robert, you know, was pivotal in all of Aaliyah's music, as you mentioned. Casey and JoJo, he's written songs for. B2K, Bump, Bump, Bump.
I did not know that until we were producing this episode.
That's what Wikipedia says. And then, ironically, I found this while I was looking this up. He also wrote at least a song for Michael Jackson called Cry. But then when you think of Michael's music, obviously you have the big hitters like Billie Jean and Thriller and Man in the Mirror. But also, like, can you listen to the Jackson 5 Christmas album?
You know, it's interesting you ask that, because one of the group chats I'm in was talking about, like, is it okay for me to play, like, the Jackson 5 Christmas? And someone said, like, well, he wasn't, like, doing the egregious things that we know that he did later then, so maybe, I don't know. And it was, like, this weird question of, like, what is okay? And we'll kind of get into how we address what we listen to now and what we don't at the end of this conversation. But, like, I think it's an open question of, like, what is okay, air quote, and what's not? Because I know for me, Michael Jackson, like, I remember the Remember the Time video, but, like, I remember the Black or White video with Macaulay Culkin, because I was, like, a huge Home Alone fan. And, right, well, I remember, like, the faces morphing at the end, and Tyra Banks was one of them, and me being like, what is happening in this video? It's so cool and exciting. And, like, Michael Jackson is known for these, like, cool music videos that are, like, mini films, which had to have had a major influence on Beyonce, and she's talked about that as well. And, like, it's hard to think, like, oh, we can never consume that content again, or, you know, without feeling murky about it, even if we do go find it on YouTube or on Apple Music or wherever you get your music. But it always feels a little tainted. And, like, if we look at Lynn's email, I was really intrigued by one of the questions that she asked in this email was, when can I tell my kids about his alleged misdeeds, talking about Michael Jackson? I don't know what the answer to that is, right? Like, I won't say I don't know why you would have that conversation, but, like, I don't know, like, when kids are even old enough to understand what that means and understand trauma and that kind of thing. And like, but then she does, I my guess would be that Lynn doesn't want them to like grow up loving this music and just be playing it any and everywhere without any knowledge
right.
of the context that comes along with playing that music.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't got no kids, and you know, I'm not going down that road again talking about what people should or should not be doing with their kids, honey. But yeah. that being said, I do think that it's a valid question. I think it's something that everybody's grappling with both R. Kelly and Michael Jackson in different ways, right? Because Michael Jackson's dead, right? And so whatever, I've heard people talk about, like, you know, R. Kelly is still going to make money from your streams, right?
Sure.
Whereas Michael Jackson, he did, he can't make money from it. But, you know, his family, children, etc., could. And so, like, is that a difference?
One of the things that I think has been most interesting about this conversation about these two artists specifically is their fame and their infamy, right? I think that if we look at the two of them, they were different in that they had opposite experiences of their fame kind of outweighing their infamy, if you will, where Michael Jackson was a global superstar, albeit he went through two trials, and this was something that, you know, was a major story in the times when those things existed. However, I don't feel like he was ever eclipsed by those moments of infamy.
Well, let's also not forget there also is the very much like raced conversation with both of them. But like, yeah. I remember seeing videos of, it was one of the cases for Michael Jackson, and like, am I remembering this right? Oh my God, please correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there like a woman outside of the whatchamacallit with white doves and they were like, am I confusing this with the OJ trial?
I don't know what you're talking
about. But it was a woman who was releasing like doves every time it was announced that like he was found not guilty on different counts of things.
I haven't heard about this.
I know y'all know what the hell I'm talking about. It was, okay, shout out to Kristen.
It was at Michael Jackson's trial.
Yes, shout out, I knew something, child.
Okay. I wasn't saying you were wrong, I just didn't hear that. Well, what I think is also interesting, though, is like, if we look at Michael Jackson and the way that like this story happened to him, and this whole story happened, I should say, because I don't know that I would say that it happened to him, but if we look at R. Kelly was a huge star, I would say, more so with Black people, but had a lot of crossover moments where he was really in the mainstream, especially beginning with I Believe I Can Fly. But these allegations in recent years have really become bigger than the music or him as an artist or a producer. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the asterisk here is that Michael Jackson died many years before this massive documentary came out, although he did have two trials that were major, major moments mm-hmm. in his life. Whereas, you know, with R. Kelly, he is yet alive and sitting in jail. For the record, today, the day that we're taping this, is the 500th day that R. Kelly has been in jail awaiting trial. Mind you, that in and of itself is a whole conversation about the way our prison system works. And, you know, I mean, on one hand, it's like, fuck R. Kelly. But on the other hand, it's like, it is a problem that people sit in jail that long mm-hmm. without being tried. And so it's the way that we see these two cases happen, I feel like R. Kelly kind of lives in infamy forever in a way that Michael Jackson doesn't necessarily for a lot of people, because Michael Jackson died. And like, I feel like once a person dies, they become like a different thing for people on top of the fact that he was such a massive superstar to boot.
So let's get into this question that Lynn asked, right, about the love the art versus hate the artist type of thing. Are you somebody who can make that distinction? I mean, I know we kind of talked about it a little bit with the Bill Cosby episode, but like, are you somebody who can do that separation?
I feel like it's very case by case, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. I am not able to engage R. Kelly or Michael Jackson content without cringing. I'm not able to look it up on my Apple Music. I don't feel comfortable or good about, you know, typing their name into a search engine and that becoming part of my algorithm of existence online. But like, I do kind of miss it. Like, I do miss some of those songs and those videos and, like, the nostalgia that comes along with them. But it just feels so murky and weird now. Kind of similarly, like I was saying with Bill Cosby when I'm watching the show, it's hard to not be thinking, like, is this the day that he did X to someone? Or was there someone in his dressing room? Or, like, what is it like for someone else to be watching this? Like, it's hard to not think all of those things mm-hmm. while you're trying to engage. What about you?
I mean, the only way that you hear me saying or referencing like Michael Jackson or R. Kelly is if it's something that is just like deep-seated in my hippocampus. I don't even know if I'm using that right.
Probably not.
But but you know, those things that like you experience when you were younger that just are like a part of your makeup that come up unconsciously as you're moving through different spaces. Like, I think those are the ways and the times and the moments in which an R. Kelly song will pop up or a Michael Jackson song will pop up. I similarly am not searching for any of these songs. That said, I was playing Christmas music on Thanksgiving while I was cooking. And the Jackson 5 album came on and I did not turn it off. Because the songs are so good, Jesus.
But I mean, but then it's also like, well, he was a child, and maybe that's that gray area.
Well, yeah, and we should also say, right, it's probably not a gray area for a lot of people.
I think it's not.
And I think it has a lot to do with, I think there's like class issues that contribute to these conversations. There's obviously a race thing that contributes to these conversations in the ways that, like, you know, people in the same way with Bill Cosby, people feeling as if like this is a black man, we want to protect our black men, so these systems, right, these white systems aren't tearing them down and different stuff like that. So I think that plays a role into it. But it's also one of those things about like who we doubt versus who we don't doubt and why, and how our own individual identities impact whether we, you know, whether we're going to listen to the black women that, you know, say they were abused by R. Kelly and or not listen to, you know, James Safechuck and Wade Robson about their abuse, right? Mm. And so I think it's just so complicated.
Well, and I talked about this on the Bill Cosby episode also, but like I also have to be honest with myself that I have a bit of a protectiveness over them because they are ours, if you will, as black superstars.
Mm-hmm. Because they niggas.
Because I think when I hear white people talking about Michael Jackson did this or R. Kelly did that, I'm like, okay, but toe the line. And you said something that was really, really useful for me. He was like, because there's a way that you can have a conversation about this and not slip into racism, right?
Right.
And not, because I think that these conversations that we have about them, we can talk about the facts of what they did, but like those conversations can very quickly start to veer into places that become uniquely problematic, if you will. And so it's a really difficult, like if the Jackson 5 Christmas came on and, you know, my white friends started talking about it in one way or another, I probably would start to feel a bit of a way about it in a way that I, mm-hmm. if I'm being honest, probably wouldn't the same if it was a black person. And like, that's that protectiveness.
I also wonder about if there is, you know, as we wrap up, if there's some sort of danger in us splicing, you know, what works of certain people that we will engage with versus other works because of their age at the time or because they were working with other people. Like I just wonder about that. Like if that is a legitimate,
like, say more.
I'm saying in terms of like, you know, like we talking about the Jackson 5 albums, like, and how some folks' justification is like, I will listen to that because he was a kid and that was before, you know, any of these, you know, moments happened. But I just wonder about that separation and those lines that we put up that ensure and allow us to still engage with the art of folks' abusers. You know, and you know, I guess I should say That's assuming you believe, I guess, the whatchamacallit, the accusations. But again, I can't unsee what I saw. I can't unfeel what I felt.
Yeah. Well, and I think really important part of what you just said there was that, like, there are plenty of people for both of these artists who do not believe these allegations, who say that it is all bullshit, that, like, and I know that when we put the show out, including the words Michael next to Jackson, is going to make, you know, our mentions look a certain kind of way for a while. But, like, for me specifically, like, I can't say that, like, I think you said it very well when you said, like, I can't unsee what I saw. And I can't unhear what I heard, and I can't unfeel what I felt. Because when I saw those documentaries, if I'm a person who is inclined to believe victims when they tell me what's happened to them, I have a really hard time, like, disassociating what I've heard this person allegedly did in some of these instances. It makes it really difficult to know how to go forward. But I guess we've kind of started to touch on this, but I know for myself, I engage Michael Jackson differently than I do R. Kelly when it comes to the actual content. A bit, like, because Michael Jackson is dead and cannot make money anymore and, like, cannot live and enjoy the fruits of that, if you will, I feel less bad about listening to Michael Jackson content if it comes on at a party or, you know, if it's wherever. But, like, because R. Kelly is alive and does still stand to gain from it, I am way less okay with his content being played at a party or just playing in my house when I'm, you know, cleaning up or whatever I'm doing. I feel like the interesting asterisk here would be, what if you had it on CD, or if you even had a way to play that, because I don't. But, like, if you owned it in a way that they would not make money off of it anymore, would you feel more comfortable? Because, like, if you go on YouTube, seemingly there's revenue attached to that. Mm-hmm. If you're on Spotify or Apple Music or Tidal or what have you, there's money attached to that. But, like, then I was thinking about that yesterday when we produced this. I was like, well, what if I had, like, the CD or something like that? Would that feel differently because they don't make more money off of every spin of that?
I think it might if the money aspect is your, you know, your line of reasoning for how you feel. I think for me, I remember at Sundance, the day after the Michael Jackson documentary played, I was at a party and they were playing Michael Jackson. And wow, it was awkward.
Yeah.
As fuck.
Well, because nowadays, if you go to a party, you know, we talked about this in the production meeting. If you're at, you know, a grown and sexy kind of event where people are wearing white linen or something, like, there,
not white linen, Jesus, not Chicago stepping music, okay, for the aunties. Like,
it's not unlikely that R. Kelly might come up, right? Or Michael Jackson. And I know for myself, like, no, not here, hey. Not here. but, like, you kind of talked about, like, the question of you know, whether or not you feel comfortable with it. I know for myself, I feel like playing R. Kelly's music in a party or in a club or at a restaurant or what have you, I feel like that is a political choice.
I feel like
you have made a decision that you're going to do something.
I think R. Kelly is different. I think you're right. Playing R. Kelly is a decided choice. Playing MJ, I think you get a lot more leeway with that, more broadly speaking. I will say that I will remove myself from the dance floor. That is just something that I have decided for both artists. But, like, I'm also not going to be that person that's like, you shouldn't dance to that person, you shouldn't play it, because, like, what you do for you is what you do for you. But, like, I'm going to control over here because that's all I can really do.
Same. Yeah. If I'm at a party and they start playing it, then I'm going to come off the dance floor. We want to know what your thoughts are on this topic. I'm sure there are many different ways to look at this. And
I'm sure we missed something, as we always do.
Well, but we want to know what you think about this and kind of hear your feedback on it. You can tweet us or hit us up on Instagram. Both are at Fanti Podcast. And you can slip into our DMs. You can tweet us, respond to the things that we have there. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, y'all's listener feedback. Again, y'all had a lot to say about the last episode. We'll get into that. That's next. All right, so ladies and gentlemen,
what we're is here to this? Talk to you
about Dipsy. That's right, Dipsy. I just before we get into like the nitty gritty of this ad read, I'd want to say Dipsy has new stories from Sarunas Jackson, who you might know from Insecure. He played Dro on Insecure,
yes,
and he has like three different stories on there, and I was like, well, let me see what Sarunas is talking about. I was like, oh, these are hot. This is pretty dope. It was really great. Just because you're grown up doesn't mean you've outgrown bedtime stories. Whether you want a story to turn you on or wind you down for better sleep, yeah. Dipsy helps you get in touch with yourself for some extra sweet dreams. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. They release new stories every week, so there's always more to explore, no matter what you're into or what turns you on. Dipsy also has wellness sessions to help you learn more about yourself, and bedtime stories and soundscapes to help you relax before you drift off.
And for listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/fantie. That's a 30-day free trial when you go to Dipsy, DipsySeaStories.com/fantie. DipsySeaStories.com/fantie.
And make sure you go get that story with Sarunas Jackson. It's called Off the Record. It's good.
All right, beautiful people, welcome back to Fantie. We're going to get into our listener feedback segment, which I have now renamed Listeners Read the Fuck Out of Travel Because They Are Trash.
Because they being whom?
They being me.
Just to be clear.
Listen, I am a work in progress, okay? And it is difficult, maybe not difficult, but it is an experience to be some sort of a visible person who has to come on this podcast and run our mouth and then show you how capable of being trash that we all are. But before we get into the emails this week, you mentioned it a little bit at the top of the show, but we got a little email this week from somebody. What is this? Appel Podcast.
I thought it was Apple
Podcast. Okay, maybe it's Apple Podcast. And I'm paraphrasing here, but like the gist of the email was, "Dear Jared and Travel, we at Apple Podcast recognize that all that good you bring us every week is amazing, especially, you know, this episode and that episode. Anyways, you made our best of list. I think they called us one of their favorite podcasts of the 2020. So shout out to us.
That's right. Yes, I was on a phone call and I saw a text from you like, oh my God, look at this. And I was like, what is this? It was very much like, it was very nonchalant because you don't get excited about anything. And so when I saw your text message, it was like, I was on the phone with actually Jared, who's been here on the show, Jared Lucas. And I was like, oh my God. And so then I went over to the Apple Podcast app and like opened it up and I saw like, there we were. And it was very exciting to see that we were one of their favorites of the year.
So it was really interesting.
One of 12 favorites of the year.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was on Twitter and Gene Demby from the Code Switch podcast had retweeted Apple Podcast because Code Switch was named like the best podcast.
Show of the year.
Best show, right, of the year. And I was like, oh, let me go look at it in the app. Let me just go see. And then I was like, oh, the podcast's right there. And then they said our favorites. And I was like, oh, let me scroll. And then we're like the fifth on the list or something like that, fifth or sixth on the list. And I was just like, oh, wow, that's interesting. So
it is crazy to me that like, because I just want people to understand there are almost like a million podcasts out right now. And like for y'all to give us that kind of love was really, really great. And I appreciated it.
I knew it was coming, okay? Because I don't do nothing but excellence. Fuck. I just don't. And you don't either, okay? Anyway. I mean,
that's true.
Anyway, okay. Let's get into these emails this week, okay? Jordan, when Jordan has to edit this, she could be like, okay, y'all done gone over time, Jesus.
This is a special episode.
So I'm going to keep it rather quick. We've got a few emails. This first one comes from Lee in response to last week's episode about Common Ground. Lee says, I wanted to give some quick feedback on episode 43, in which Travel corrected Jarrett by saying, and to be clear, I'm going to go back and respond to some of these words. I don't like some of the word choices being used. But in which Travell corrected Jared by saying that he was not really reading, but actually having someone read to him. As someone who has had ADHD and difficulty focusing on reading books, I found this is common gatekeeping behavior that discounts folks with issues like learning disabilities, dyslexia, ADHD, people that prefer listening rather than reading, etc. Putting yourself in a higher echelon because reading is quote unquote better than listening is at best pedantic and at worst ableist. So
they also did say, I'm sure that they didn't mean it like that though.
Right, but like you can't be putting
they
that
gave
little,
you a lot and then rein it
exactly,
back in.
Exactly. which keeps happening, and like I want to say drag me against the coals, you know, when the time comes, cuz I am not perfect and like I want to be better and all of that. That being said, I want to say this. I was not making a distinction between reading versus listening because I felt as if I was somewhat better than you because I read because I don't even read fucking books, okay? I don't know the last book I read. Oh, I do know the last book I read. The last book I read was The Mother of Black Hollywood by Jennifer Lewis. Y'all should check that out.
Really good.
The audiobook as well, which is
an amazing audiobook, by the way.
Okay. Right, exactly. Because she's reading it herself. But like, I didn't intend it that way, but I do. I'm not even going to say what I was about to say because last night, I'm not going to lie to you, I was on the couch and I was high out of my mind and I was thinking about this question. And I was like, let me just do some Googles. And so I just started reading like other people's thoughts about this particular idea of like reading versus listening and the iterations thereof. And all I'll say is like, that was not my intention. Because I get the difference. And I also wonder about, we've ended up talking about language so much on this show. But I also wonder about like, why reading as a term has to or should also be considered reading when somebody's listening to something. And like, why listening in and of itself can't just be a sufficient thing in and of itself. And like I get the particulars around it, but that's a question that has been in my head that none of the articles that I came across at least looked at it from that perspective in terms of like the ways in which we just give power to certain words and take power from other words and the juxtaposition therein. But I did want to thank Lee for like bringing that up because I did not even consider it prior to their email.
So you and I haven't really talked about this, but like when you said it, it did like bring a little thing in me, but like you and I have plenty of like conversation and I'm just like, I knew that it didn't have anything malicious behind it. But I know that for myself, one, as someone who was diagnosed with ADHD a long time ago, I have struggled for a long time with the fact that I'm much better with audiobooks than I am with like turning pages. Like if I have to sit down and read a book, like it will take me forever and it'll just
maybe I have not read half the things on my motherfucking bookshelf.
Well, but like I do know that for myself, if I'm listening to a book, I can get way more I can get through it way more easily. And it's also something that I've learned about the way that I work, that for myself, if I am writing, designing, creating, whatever I'm doing, if I have something playing in the background, oftentimes that is really, really helpful to quiet the other side of my brain so that I can focus on whatever it is that I'm doing. And so, but I know for a long time I was embarrassed to tell people that I only did audiobooks, but as I started to recognize like it is what it is and like this is how my brain works or how I learn, I've just kind of embraced it more, but it is something that I think is a bit of a murky thing for some people. And like whether or not an audiobook is reading or not or whatever, but like it's a book and like you finished the book or whatever. Like I finished.
Yeah, you consumed it nonetheless.
Whatever, right? And I will say to people like I'm reading this book and like I will always give them the asterisk of, you know, I'm doing the audiobook. Secondly, I also am a big memoirist person and I like to hear the person's voice telling their own story, which is if we're thinking about The Mother of Black Hollywood or if we're thinking about Barack Obama or whatever the book is, that's always been something that I just enjoy hearing people tell their own story. So I appreciate the sentiment from Lee. I understood where you were coming from because I've had that same ADHD kind of experience. So yeah.
And then I just, the one last quick email before we get out of here. We have an email from Emily who emailed us about an older episode. They're going through the catalog, the White Singer Black Voice episode. Mm-hmm. And they say, this was fascinating for me, a white hard of hearing gal. I'll be the first one to admit that I don't quote unquote get music like hearing folks. I don't pay attention to music/musicians. Lyrics mean nothing to me and concerts aren't fun. I just experience and hear music differently. And honestly, there was a lot in that episode where I was thinking, wait, that sounds black? So listening to you all break down what sounds black from these white people and why was absolutely enlightening. It gave me an opportunity to reflect and figure out if my perspective gap was because of my hearing loss or if it was because I'm white. Pretty sure it's a combination. That's Emily's words, not mine, FYI. It's something that I had never really considered before, just given that I don't think about music. But turns out it was really important to reflect on. So I thought that was a cute one to share.
I am so fascinated by this email because the thing that makes me think about this all the time is I'm a person who loves to have the closed captioning on when I'm watching a film or, you know, things that are scripted or whatever. And like they'll put in there like somber music or pop music or whatever, it'll say that in the subtitle. And I'm like, if I could not hear, how would that translate to me? Like, what would that mean to me? Like, because you kind of have to fill in that gap for yourself, right? Of like what that music is supposed to sound like. Dramatic music, scary music, like, what are you supposed to do with that? And it's always seemed like an interesting kind of conversation. So to get this email from Emily, I appreciate it, because that was something that I have not really thought about, like with that conversation that we had on that show. That was really interesting. So thanks, Emily.
Thank you, Emily. And for the sake of time, FYI, Maria, we was going to do your email this episode, but we're going to just push it to next week because, you know, we run it up on time, okay? So we'll talk to you next week. So now we're going to get into our dishonorable mentions for the week. This is our opportunity to highlight the stories of the people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out either for their good or their foolish. Jared, do you want to go first?
I have one thing that I really want to focus on this week. There's a fantastic piece in The New Yorker from Shane Bauer. It is about a city called Vallejo and their police department. And
California?
Vallejo, California. It matters to me because that's where my family lives. My parents live there. The headline is How a Deadly Police Force Ruled a City, and it is an incredible piece. It takes a bit of time to read. They don't have the audio option to be able to get through it, but I just thought it was an incredible piece about the impact of policing on a city, and the ways that police and police unions and use of force and all of that, there's so many interesting conversations happening in that piece. I'll make sure to include the link in our description, but again, it's Shane Bauer's piece in The New Yorker called How a Deadly Police Force Ruled a City. I thought it was incredible.
I have three honorable mentions that I want to shout out. They're all fairly quick. First up, on Netflix, y'all should check out Dance Dreams, the Hot Chocolate Nutcracker. It is a documentary from Shonda Rhimes, in case you don't know who Shonda is. And it's all about Debbie Allen and her Debbie Allen Dance Academy and this holiday, basically black version of the Nutcracker that they do every year here in the LA area. And it's a really good documentary featuring some of her dancers, her reflecting on her life and career. Really good opportunity, something easy, something light for you all this holiday, you know, time period, and it was really enjoyable. So shout out to that. I want to give a quick shout out to a few months ago, I think, was so funny.
I'm looking at your list of things here and I know what one of these things is. So yeah.
Spoiling it for the people, Jesus.
I didn't say what it was. I didn't say that it was about Dionne Warwick. I didn't say
anything. Wow. You're disrespectful. Anyway, so a few months ago, I told y'all to pre-order this book called Black Futures, edited by Kimberly Drew and Jenna Wortham. That book is officially on stands now, and so make sure you pick it up from your local Black-owned bookstore. Show these lovely folks some love for the fabulous thing that they have put together. My man also has a piece in there, so you know, you make sure you check that out as well. And then last but not least, I want to, my favorite thing on Twitter these days is following Dionne Warwick, as you have spoiled. Dionne Warwick is just, you know how like sometimes older people, when they are dealing with some sort of like new technology thing, how that process of realization and exploration that they have can sometimes be very entertaining.
Very entertaining.
That is what this is with Dionne Warwick on Twitter. And she's tweeting it herself, and she's very clear about it to her. She did a video. She was like, because somebody tweeted at the account and was like, whoever's on your social media team, you need to give them a raise. And she did a video. She was like, it's me. You know,
it's me, baby.
Like,
did this start after Versus with Patty and Gladys?
Yes,
I would imagine it must have.
I feel like it happened literally over like the last week, maybe 2 weeks or so.
Because I've been off of social media since Thanksgiving, but I do remember seeing that she had tweeted maybe the week prior something to the effect of, "Did y'all know that week that the artist can see what playlist you're adding them to?" Yes. Or something? And I was like, "Ooh, that sounds like some good tea." Like, is it offensive or is it like raunchy? Is it like, right. What are people doing?
And then a couple of days later, she was like, she said something about like a hot girl. She was like, I don't understand, something to the effect of like, I don't understand what a hot girl is and I don't want to know, but congratulations to all the young girls, and, you know, in the industry. And I was like, this is the energy that we need on social media.
Is Dionne Warwick on some real hot girl shit?
The moment I wake up.
Listen, okay, real hot girl auntie, okay?
I love that. I'm going to have to make sure to catch up on her when I come back to social. That is this week's episode for us. We thank you so much for listening and for waiting this long for this episode. If you are a fan of the show, we ask that you go over to Apple Podcasts, where, if you haven't heard, we are one of the best podcasts of 2020. Don't know if you heard about that. Just wanted to mention. You can leave us a 5-star rating or a review. We love them both, and they're really helpful to getting the show seen, as you can see.
And we should also say, you know, because we know some of y'all have been keeping the podcast just close to your chest because you don't want nobody else to know about this greatness, okay? Now, you don't have to feel responsible for sharing it because Apple already did it. And so, okay, you could call up your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your they friend, your mama, your daddy, your sister, your brother, your uncle, your auntie. Tell them about the podcast. Tell them about what we're doing here. Tell them
because now we've been validated by Apple as a great show.
Listen.
So you can use that
whatever
as your way in.
It works for other people, I don't care, but what I do know is that the people out here in the world need to be blessed by this greatness, and you can help us be proselytizers of the Fanti message. And as always, if you would like to become a member of the Fanti family, of the Maximum Fun fam, you can join at MaximumFun.org/join and help to financially contribute to one of the best podcasts of 2020, according to Apple.
Oh, are we one of the best podcasts?
I'm not doing this with you. We are at the end of the show. Let's go.
You can email us at fanti@maximumfun.org. That's fanti@maximumfun.org. Our music is by Corrice. You can find him everywhere you get your Slayworthy music. That is Correce. Our graphics and video design are by Ashley Nguyen. And our producers this week, we got a couple. We have an extra name in here. So this week's episode is produced by, you ready?
Yes. It's going to be regular Davis Begler, child. I'm tired.
Okay. Well, our producer this week is Kristen Bennett. Jordan Keller. And Laura Swisher. Do the step up there? Did you get the modulation?
No, nobody cares.
I went up a kid.
This is a production of Maximum Fun. Oh, Lordy.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
That's actually the best work I've heard you ever do.
You are disrespectful to me.
Honey,
go to break, Jordan.
I may be disrespectful,
Kristen,
but I'm
Laura,
honest.
Go to break.